everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Seipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Laos and Ken Levin. How are you guys doing this week?
All right.
Pretty well.
All right, so back in 1971, the Society for American Baseball Research was founded in Cooperstown, Sabre. Bob Davids was the guy that founded it. He was a writer and statistician from the 50s and 60s. And I didn't really realize how far back that kind of progressive thinking in baseball went. Because when you think of it, you know, you think of maybe the 2000s. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even, you know, decades before, you still had guys doing all that research and all those findings. And obviously all that stuff has had a major impact on baseball and how it's been perceived and how the game has gotten run and everything.
Steve, all I hear is that they're a bunch of nerds.
Yeah, pretty much.
The only thing that came out of your mouth there.
Yeah, so in honor of all those nerds and stat frauds out there, what stats are we going to promote, extend, or trade?
Oh, this is a good one.
So we have fielding percentage.
Oh,
we have
God.
RBI, and we have ERA.
I'm going to blow up
ERA.
I'm blowing up the team and rebuilding. Everything's gone. First, fielding percentage is the worst, right? Like, that's even worse. Is that worse than RBIs?
I don't think so. At least fielding percentage tells you something useful, regardless of how flawed.
Yeah,
that,
I guess
that
it tells
is.
You, like, it's a measure of, like, how good your hands are, I guess, kind of. Something like that. Yeah, so trade RBIs.
Yeah, RBI just serves no purpose for valuation or anything like that whatsoever.
Ken is totally right that ERA is, while not good, is the best of these statistics.
Yes, definitely flawed, but, I mean, it correlates with pretty much the more advanced things.
Flawed,
usually.
But usable. Unlike the other two, which are garbo.
Flawed, but very flawed.
Flawed, but no redeeming quality whatsoever.
That is definitely correct.
In before we get some old man yellow cloud comments on this pod.
Luckily, I don't think we have any listeners, so.
Hoggers.
All good. All right. The Unilions in Taiwan went 4-1 this week. So I think they reached the portion of the season where they make a late surge back into contention, just like the Mets. And they are currently 32-39 on the year. And the hitter of the week is Anko Lin, who has one of the best swings in the league, if you haven't seen any of the constant gifs that I'm retweeting of him. But he went 5-17 with 4 homers, 12 RBI, a walk, and 5 strikeouts. And he's the league leader in home runs now with 24.
That's a hell of a week.
Yeah, I mean, 4 home runs is always good. And then pitcher of the week is someone new, finally. It is Su Chien Shi, who went 6 innings this week. He allowed 3 unearned runs on 6 hits, 2 walks, and had 3 strikeouts.
So if this was the correct Mets parallel, right, this guy is some either former top prospect who's never made good on it or some veteran retread that seemed to be on their way out. He's going to pitch well this week, and for the rest of the season, they'll give him way too much money on like a 3 or 4 year deal, and he'll go right back to being awful next season.
Good call. He was drafted in 2017.
Nailed it.
Yep, he was their third round pick. He appeared in a couple of games that year, but he really broke out in 2018. He posted a 3.86 ERA, and he won Rookie of the Year award in 2018. And he really wasn't able to keep that kind of momentum going last year. He posted a 6.42 ERA, which is about a run and a half higher than league average. And the same thing so far this season. He has a 6.20 ERA, which is a little above league average, not too much. But yeah, the stuff isn't stupendous. And it's looking more and more like that Rookie of the Year season was more of an illusion than reality.
Rookie of the Year is almost a curse.
Kind of is, yeah.
It can be real weird.
Chris Coughlin won it that one year when he was just really good for the Marlins and then was Chris Coughlin the rest of his career.
One year in the early 2000s, Eric Hinsky and Jason Jennings won.
Well, I forgot about Jason. Well, Jason Jennings, he was a big-time prospect, wasn't he?
He had, like, one big year.
Yeah, yeah.
The one for the Rockies, though.
Am I thinking of... I'm thinking of Desmond Jennings. That's someone mm-hmm. different.
Mm. Yeah, he was a big
name
that didn't pan out.
I mean, Eric Hinsky had that, like, six-year stretch where whatever team he was on made the World Series. He was, like, the good luck charm.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, a bunch of, like, the Rays twice. I don't even remember. I think he was on the Yankees
once. The Yankees, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then he went to the Pirates, I think, and they obviously didn't make the World Series because they're the Pirates.
One day.
There are some names in here. There's some good names and some bad names. So the year Chris Coughlin won, it was Andrew Bailey in Oakland. He was good until he blew out his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The year before, you had Evan Longoria, and so that worked. But then also Giovanni Soto, which didn't.
He was good for a couple of years.
He was like in that 2 or 3. Yeah, he was like that last batch of catchers where it was acceptable to just not play defense as a catcher. If you could hit, and then the league kind of realized, wait, that's bad. Framing's important. Who the hell is Bobby Crosby in 2004? I have no idea who that is.
And the name is familiar, but I could not tell you a single
no idea.
Detail about him.
Rookie of the Year is weird.
Yeah, I mean, you just really need to be better than everyone else in popularity, and it's not always hard to be. All right, next up are the LG Twins, and they went 3-2, and they had a game postponed by rain. So they are 43-33-1, which is fourth place in the league behind the NC Dinos, the Kiwoom Heroes, and the Doosan Bears. So player of the week, pitching and hitting, are guys that everyone should be familiar with this at this point. Hyunsoo Kim and Casey Kelly. Kim went 8-for-19 with a double, two homers, 7 RBI, a walk, and a strikeout. And Kelly went 7 innings, giving up 2 runs on 5 hits with 2 walks, a hit by pitch, and 6 strikeouts.
That's the Casey Kelly that was traded for Aegon at one point, right?
Yeah, he used to be a big-time Red Sox prospect.
Right, what did they trade with him? Like, for Christ's sake, you'd think I'd remember this. Rizzo, right. Rizzo, Kelly, and then that random outfielder. What's his name? Raymond Fuentes. And then
that
they
is
traded,
really random.
Yeah, then they traded Rizzo for Yonder Alonso, and that didn't work. Right? No.
Yes. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
they traded from Andrew Kashner. They traded him for Andrew Kashner, and that didn't work out.
Oh,
so well.
Oh.
Then I didn't even realize he was over in Korea. I already forgot.
He's been pitcher of the week like 7 times.
No, but it right, but it never clicked that it's that dude.
Right,
that
right,
guy.
Right.
Life comes at you fast.
I mean, good for him. Chasing the dream still. Probably getting paid more than we are to go play baseball in Korea.
Yeah, he's basically their ace and has been for the last couple of years. So he's making a million or so a year, which is more than he'd be getting if he was just kind of kicking around in the minors.
Making a million or so a year to live abroad, eat Korean barbecue every night, and play baseball sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue. Finally, now, the Occult Swallows. They went 2-3 and had a tie this week. So that leaves them at 19-17-5. Which is 4 games behind the Yumiuri Giants. And hitter of the week is Yasutaka Shiomi. And he went 7-for-18 with a homer, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. So kind of a boring week. That's not really that impressive. But Shiomi was drafted by the Swallows in 2017. He graduated high school and college without getting drafted. But he impressed the right people when he was playing in the industrial leagues for JX Holdings, which is a petroleum and metal company in Japan. And he went professional because of his play there. And basically in 2018 and 2019, his first 2 years, the same exact thing happened. He hit really well in the minors, and then he struggled when he was promoted. But this year, he's settled in pretty well to his part-time role. And currently, he has a 268, 302, 585 batting line in 13 games. And all in all, he's kind of a generic and unexciting player. He's one of those guys that gives you a little bit in a bunch of areas. He hits for an okay average, a little bit of power, a couple of stolen bases, solid center field defense, you know, nothing really eye-popping anywhere, but all right, you know, stuff all around. The most interesting thing that I found out about him is that when he was in college, the team, they would train in Sagamihara, which is a suburb of Tokyo that's by the Tensawa Mountains, and they have a lot of wild animals that live out there. So one of the things that the team would do would this sounds kind of dangerous, really, would they would chase and run with the wild boar that live there. So
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I mean, not really. Probably not.
Are they familiar with one Yoenis Cespedes?
Probably not, no.
Where do you think he learned it?
Ah, that's it. That's it.
But Shiomi always, you know, he made note that he was never able to outrun the boars, but he ran shoulder to shoulder with them. So he's as fast as one wild boar.
Cool.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to gauge your speed.
That's like the first thing that came to mind was that, remember, like, maybe 5-7 years ago, the Pirates got in trouble for their, like, military-style like, this is, like, the next step. We went past the military training. You're going wild. Go chase, go wrestle with this tiger. It'll teach you something about hitting. I don't know.
In Japan, they kind of do that, so it's, you know, this really is not that crazy of a story. Like, when you hear the kind of stereotypical things, like, you know, standing under the waterfalls to build up tolerance and things like that, like, they do legit do that kind of stuff, so.
Hell, dude, it's a little psycho.
Yeah.
A little
and
bit.
not even, like, professional, like, these are high school and college teams, so.
Kind of makes it worse.
Exactly. All right, our pitcher of the week is a little more interesting, a gentleman by the name of Hirofumi Yamanaka. And he pitched 8 scoreless innings, allowing 4 hits, walking 1, and striking out 2. Like Shiomi, Yamanaka was drafted out of the Industrial Leagues. Yamanaka worked for Honda, and he impressed the right people. And at the tender age of 27, he was drafted by the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks in the 2012 draft with their 6th pick. And he didn't spend much time with them because he was traded to the Swallows in a package the very next year. And unlike the Hawks, the Swallows used him as a starter instead of a reliever, and he was fairly solid. He posted mid-3 ERAs in 3 of the last 5 seasons. But those 2 other seasons where he didn't, he was really bad. And that's why he started in the minors this year. And he was actually, his start this week was actually his first one at the major league level. So starting out your year throwing 8 scoreless innings, pretty good. And what makes Yamanaka
better than anything in the Met bullpen, that's for sure.
Yeah, and what makes Yamanaka interesting is that he's a submarine pitcher, so guys like that are always fun to see. And the fact that he's able to do that over multiple innings as a starter is pretty crazy.
And when was the last time there was a submarine starter in Major League Baseball?
Probably have to go back to, like, 70s, maybe even before. I don't know.
Did Joel Pinheiro throw submarine? Nah, or is he just like a weird sinker dude?
That is, yeah, like there are guys that have weird, like, sidearm angles where they drop down and do weird things, but Byung Ho Kim, was he a starter at one point?
Maybe. Trying to think. Don't remember.
But, yeah, I mean, it's very, very rare. And the fact that he's able to post solid numbers as a starter with a fastball that sits in the mid-70s and a 60-mile-per-hour slider is, you know, it's fun stuff. And a 70-mile-per-hour screwball, so.
It's just aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. anytime guys have weird mechanics that they're able to make work, it's fun, because too often in Major League Baseball, everyone just kind of cut out of the same mold. Yeah. All right, so we have some player news to address this week. First thing is that Michael Wacha, he was put on the DL. So probably, I guess, the thing that would make the most sense would be to have Franklin Quilomé brought back up and see how he does again. He was solid in his first start. Was it a start, or was it just multiple innings out of the bullpen?
Okay.
So, I mean, he was, however it came, he was pretty solid in those couple of innings. So at this point, I don't ever want to see Michael Wacha pitch again. Or Rick Porcello.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with Wacha, but yeah, I don't need to see any more Porcello. Alternatively, Harold Gonzalez.
Yeah, I
mean, he's not even on the thing.
Harold.
No, but apparently the teams, it's not a permanent thing. Like, teams can just add guys willy-nilly to it whenever they feel like.
Yeah,
probably. Because the next guy that we'll talk about now is Luis Carpio, and he was added to the player pool.
And why?
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty redundant with Amed Rosario and Andres Jimenez and Luis Guillorme and Brian Dozier all.
And Jeff McNeil.
Oh, Jeff McNeil, too. That's right. He is technically second base. I mean, I don't know. I don't really see the need for
he's
Luis
just
Carpio.
Like worse Luis Guillorme, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not all that enthused with his bat. His defense isn't what it once was. It's not terrible, but it's not really that great either. He's probably really just limited to second.
The arm never came all the way back after the shoulder, right?
So. Yeah, right. So, I mean, he really is in every regard probably an inferior version of everybody that they already have at the major league level. So, I don't know.
I don't get that at all. Granted, like, he probably, like, he's never going to see playing time, so it doesn't much matter, but...
Yeah, I mean...
Literally just a body at the alternate spring site, or the alternate training site.
Exactly. It's probably just to get him some... Maybe he's going to be the player to be named in that trade that the Mets made, and they're just getting him some reps before they send him away. I don't know, but...
That trade didn't make any sense to me either, but that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah. Not good.
Yeah. Traded for a bad depth starter when they already have several bad depth starters. Why?
Just one more example of the Mets not having any clue what the left hand is doing and what the right hand is doing, because there's just no planning ahead and none of it makes sense.
It'd be one thing if they traded for, like, an interesting arm, but they traded for a guy who has no record of posting strikeouts and an extremely limited record of having an even competent ERA. And, like, in 2017, there were some scouting reports like, oh, maybe he's a fourth starter or something like that. It's a very Jeff-type prospect, I think. He's been bad since then. So, like, what are you doing?
I just happened to randomly open up Twitter and somebody either retweeted or liked, like, one of those kinds of things where you see someone that you don't actually follow, that the Pirates signed Henderson Alvarez. Like, there are, you know, I think that I have more faith in Henderson Alvarez than I do in Ariel Jurado, I believe this new guy's name is.
Yeah.
So, like, why are you trading for guys that you can probably just sign as free agents? Players that are better. I don't know. I don't get it. It makes no sense to me.
The Mets.
Yeah. So, I mean, given the caliber of player that he is, I don't think that the Mets are going to be that player to be named later is not going to be, you know, an Alvarez or a Vientos or something like that. But still, I mean, the Mets are not really, unless it's an obvious depth guy with no upside really whatsoever, which the Mets do have a lot of.
That's true.
But even in that case, again, what are you trading these guys away for when you can just sign a comparable and probably better player? But I don't know. I'm not a GM, so what do I know?
Were you an agent until recently?
Oh, that's true. I'm not an agent turned GM, so I don't know anything.
I remember I used to have a history teacher back at UCLA who said to us that there were times when you could feel the fist of history tightening around you. I've always thought about that. She was talking not long after 9/11, but this is another one of those moments. It is a hinge moment in the American democratic experiment. The entire globe is being battered by the coronavirus. We are dealing with some of our oldest wounds in this country on top of entirely new technologies. Like, it is a crazy time. I'm Ezra Klein, host of the Ezra Klein Show podcast, and what we're trying to do right now is understand our time and try to find some of the ideas that might help us chart a way out of it. In the past few months, we've talked to Ta-Nehisi Coates about why the protests have made him actually hopeful, to Mariana Mazzucato about the ways in which the economics profession has misunderstood the concept and mismeasured the concept of value, to Elizabeth Warren about her plan to combat the coronavirus, to Ross Douthat about whether or not American society has become decadent. These have all been great conversations, and there are so many more. I hope you'll join me every Monday and Thursday to stay informed and maybe get a sense of hope as well. Subscribe to The Ezra Klein Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this right now.
All right. So the season is about 2 weeks old now, give or take. And the two guys that kind of made the team at the beginning, David Peterson and Andres Jimenez, they've gotten some fairly in-depth looks now, which is definitely not something that would have happened if we were having a normal 2020 season. So Peterson, so far, he has a 3.78 ERA in three starts, pitching 16 and two-thirds innings with 16 hits allowed, six walks, and 14 strikeouts. And Jimenez is hitting 276, 323, 345 in 31 plate appearances with one walk, two strikeouts, and two stolen bases. And I'm pretty sure that he stole another base in today's game. So let's start with Peterson first. I think that pretty much what we're getting from him right now is like the best case scenario. You know, he's kind of always a strong back at the end starter. And right now he is slightly better than average. So with a 105 ERA plus. So, I mean, what you see is pretty much what you're going to get from him. And that's fine.
He had the number one pitch on Pitching Ninja yesterday. That's important.
Yes. Got to win the back.
The slider will look good occasionally.
Granted, it was to Lewis Brinson, who will sometimes swing stupidly, but he made Lewis Brinson look stupid. So that was a nice slider. Like, hit him as he was swinging at it. Like, okay, nice.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of quibble about the level of competition that he's faced so far, Peterson. But
yeah.
I mean, even if let's say he's facing the three, you know, toughest teams in his three starts so far, then the ERA is, let's say, you know, 95 instead of 105. That makes him a little bit below average. He's still well within that range of, you know, just kind of generic back of the rotation guy.
To generic back of the rotation guy, that means you don't have to spend $10 million on Rick Porcello every offseason.
Exactly. That is the most important thing about gauging what the Mets have this season.
And the rotation's thinner than it used to be, so like that's important.
Oh, yeah. We always made Mark Burley comparisons, so I was just kind of looking at his baseball reference page, and like I didn't realize how good Burley actually was, and he really doesn't get enough credit for being as good as he was.
Very long career.
Yeah. I mean, ERA plus of 117 for his career, so he was pretty, you know, above average. And that wasn't that was an era where offense was a bit inflated as compared to today. And he pitched 50 innings in his rookie year, and then basically every single season after that, he pitched 200 or more, except for his last season. He pitched 198 innings. So that's basically 200.
Dude, so. his last season, I didn't realize his last season was that good.
Yeah, like, I looked back at it, I was like, wow, this guy's, like, I knew he was, like, good. Like, he was the for a while, he was, like, the quote-unquote ace for the White Sox, but not really ace material, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But on a lot of bad White Sox teams. So he was on the one that won the World Series that everyone forgets about, right?
I believe that was one of his first seasons, like.
White Sox World Series. Yeah, I'm talking about it. I don't even know what year it was. 2005.
Yes.
So, yeah, he was on that team.
I want to say his rookie year is like 2002 or something.
His rookie year is 2000.
2000, wow, okay, so.
In 2015, he threw 198 and in two-thirds innings with a 3.81 ERA and a 4.26 FIP. That was good for two WAR, and I guess he just said, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, if David Peterson turned into that, I mean, that would be...
That is the 99.5 percentile outcome.
That is... He's a very underrated player, Burley.
Not a Hall of Famer, I don't think, but...
No.
Hall of very good.
Yeah, exactly.
A White Sox Hall of Famer, I would say.
100%. Like, retire his number. I'm not sure. Maybe they have.
They have, yeah. The White Sox have.
That's good, then.
We had that perfect game where Dwayne Wise robbed a home run with one out in the ninth, so you know, also a good highlight.
Mm-hmm. All right, so next then, obviously, is Andrés Giménez, and he's hitting pretty solidly. I hardly really watch games, so I'm going to have to rely on you guys more, but how is the swing looking?
It's... You go ahead, Ken.
I haven't watched a ton either, but still kind of steep, still kind of what it's been, but he's been making it work, so...
Yeah, I mean, the thing with him was that when he first started coming up to system, I saw him in Colombia, which I think it was 2016 or 2017 or whatever.
Something like that.
And he was one of those guys with, you know, a compact level swing. And then last season, he added a lot more plane to it, and it was a lot more uppercutty. Looking back, I for whatever reason, I took like 18 videos of him in Binghamton. So so I have 18 videos of data that I was looking at. It's not as stompy as I remember. He had a little bit of a leg lift, but it wasn't a terrible one. And then, you know, we got word from our eyes and ears in the Arizona Fall League that he kind of toned things down a little bit while he was there, and I mean, here we are. He's hitting, in terms of average anyway, pretty well. 276 average, I would say that.
It's 333 after today.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's three hits today.
Honestly,
looking at it now, it looks like he's kind of gotten everything more in tune with each other, you know?
That was my take, because I remember you showed us some of those videos, and he just looked uncomfortable with that.
Yeah,
it wasn't like
the wasn't kick like, doesn't look as bad. He gets the foot down. Everything looks like it's interplaying a lot better.
It also looks like he's just swinging, right? Yeah, to use a scouting euphemism I hate, but like when some of the videos you sent, it was like he was thinking through the swing. He's like, all right, I lift my leg now and I plant it now and then I do this and this. Now it just looks like he's going, right? And that's probably just a comfort thing. I'm been impressed. I'm also like the resident, not an Ahmed Rosario fan, so. Not just recently. That's at least I'm consistent on that. I've always been down on
Rosario. That is true.
Yeah.
And I think this is more impressive than anything Ahmed has ever done at the plate. Like Ahmed had a good second half last year. Someone pointed out to me in Slack, but he needed a 360 BABIP or something to do it. And Giménez has a high BABIP right now, but not. It's not just. That's not the entirety of the toolkit.
I mean, like, yeah. So, like, the other thing I was gonna say is the speed and the defense has played up about as well as you could have hoped. You know?
I mean, defense, no one ever questioned. I mean, we always knew that he's a better defender than Rosario. Like, and
I figured he might struggle with game speed for a little bit, but he really hasn't. And the speed, like one of the singles today was a bunt hit. I've seen him do that maybe two or three times. The speed's like legitimately playing. So
yeah, and that's a nice element. And look, speed isn't as important as it used to be, but it's still a nice little tool to have around. And if you're hitting a little bit and playing good defense, and you also can swipe a bag, bunt out a single every now and then, like, speed should never be your carrying tool, but as, like, his speed is nice to have in addition to the other.
He's a very useful player. He's proven.
And
I want to look.
Who knows what's going to happen with when Cano is going to be healthy. Or what the Mets infield looks like. I think in the ideal world, right, you have Robinson Cano is healthy and still able to play second base next year and the year after, and presumably you're still running J.D. Davis and Jeff McNeil out at third and left. I don't really know who you put where at this point, since it seems like they can't decide either. But there's going to be a question of who do we play at shortstop if this happens. And then, of course, Cano will get hurt. McNeil will get hurt, and on and on and on, and it'll resolve itself. But I don't know. I'm already open to the idea of starting to slide Jimenez over there more often. But
yeah,
perhaps
that's treating it more like a timeshare than.
I don't even know if I want to call it. Like the upside with, like, I understand the argument for Ahmed, right? It's there's more power upside. There's more raw physical tools. So I don't even know that that's true, given that Ahmed's speed has never really been useful in game, nor has his defense ever matched the physical tools, I don't think. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think that's fair to say. And at some point, you are what you are. Like, when, if Ahmed has all this power potential, but he's never getting to it, why would you continue to play him over Jimenez?
Well, speaking of power potential, what is Jimenez's line right now? What is his slugging?
After today's game, he is hitting today. 333, 371, 424.
424. Okay, that's pretty good.
That's okay. Yeah, that's 130 WRC plus.
Because the number that I had here from, I guess, 2 or 3 days ago when I wrote it out was 276, 323, 345. And obviously 345 is very different from 420.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that'd be on
the table. It's literally just he hit a double today. So the power, I don't know. You know, Jimenez is always probably going to struggle to hit for power.
Yeah, I'm not saying I see him hitting for power, to be clear.
One thing I want to mention is I don't really care as much about the power. He's making a ton of contact right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, through 35 plate appearances, he's only struck out, you know, 8.5% of the time. That's pretty good.
Right.
And he's really not swinging and missing, like, at all so far. 5.6% swinging strike rate.
Yeah.
So if he continues to make contact like he has so far, I'm less worried about if power is going to come, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I do. The contact, I think, is probably a little high right now, given some of the minor.
Yeah, it's going to regress.
Yeah.
Probably.
But again, to go back to the comparison, Ahmed strikes out a lot more than this, and his ISO is only, what, 50 points higher? Which is significant, but it's not. Like, this one department that Ahmed's supposed to have the theoretical advantage in, it's pretty minuscule. And I think it's, you might disagree with me, I think it's fair to say Andres is already a better defender.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely better on the base path. Paths. What singular base path am I talking about? I guess we're playing cricket now. Yeah, I mean, I think this is will be a more interesting discussion in the offseason, because right now Robinson Cano is hurt, and who knows when he'll be not hurt.
Not good.
Very Mets.
So, yeah, those are the two guys. Should we bring up Blake Taylor? He's not a Mets. Not a Mets player, but he sure is having a good season himself.
I mean, I'm writing an article about this right now. Not about Blake Taylor specifically, but the same discussion we had last week where the Mets just throw these kind of guys away and occasionally one really clicks. And it's only like 10 innings, so who knows if it actually has clicked, but Blake Taylor sure looks pretty damn good.
Well, Mets.
You could have just signed Billy Hamilton in the offseason and had both your defensive outfielder and Blake Taylor. And who else did they trade? I already forgot.
Kennedy Corona, who was
I didn't care about that part.
Short A outfielder.
Yeah. Great name.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of... He probably would have been released or something like that this year because that's just how the Mets do it. Although he does seem kind of promising in a way that, you know, 18, 19-year-old outfielders in Short A can look. But, I mean, it'll be years and years and years before anything ever pans out in regards to him, if he ever does, but whatever.
Blake Taylor currently leading all AL rookies in WAR. Hooray!
So you're saying there's a chance that the Mets traded away the American League Rookie of the Year for nothing?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, are there any other good AL rookies that I like? It's such a weird season that I could see a reliever randomly winning it. Then again, there might be enough animosity against the Astros that just people refuse to vote for him or something. I can see something like that happening.
While we're on the topic of Rookie of the Year, so what are the percentage odds, whatever, that David Peterson or Andrés Giménez get some Rookie of the Year votes? What do you guys think?
Get votes?
Yeah. I mean, at the rate that they're going, I don't think that they win it outright, either one. But
Giménez, I could see getting a few. I could see him hitting like 280.
I could
with a pretty inflated BABIP and playing, you know, an excellent defensive shortstop, stealing 20 bases or something. Nah, too many. Short. The equivalent of a 60 game season's version of 20 bases.
Eight.
Yeah, something like that. he's already at three.
Yeah. I would say. Flip a coin between the two of them, but I could see either of them coming in third. I think it's Dustin Mays to cruise to this season. The dude's filthy. And then the Padres have another random rookie who's mashing early, and because the season's so short, that might be enough. Both of them, I think, will definitely get like at least third place votes. I don't exactly remember how Rookie of the Year voting works, but something in that range.
I think it's the top three or the top five that they publish. But yeah.
Looking at the AL rookies just to see how close we are to some serious pain. Randy Dobnak. I don't actually know how to pronounce that name, but he's been like one of those meme guys everyone likes because he doesn't strike anyone out, but his ground ball rate is currently an almost very nice 68%, but he's right behind Taylor, so maybe he could pull it off. I don't know. We'll see. I almost want him to win Rookie of the Year just to drive home the point a little more harshly. Louis Robert. I'm an idiot, of course. Oh. Louis Robert and Kyle Lewis exist. Hitters exist. So no, Blake Taylor will not win Rookie of the Year in the AL. Whoops.
All right, well, that's good then, at least. So they didn't trade away the AL Rookie of the Year for nobody. No. All right, well, does anyone have any last words for the week?
No, really.
Aside from don't trade away the AL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, don't do that. Give me Franklin Killame, and if I can't have that, give me Harold Gonzalez. We'll get is Corey Oswalt, and we'll like it.
Yeah, probably.
Won't like it.
All right. If anybody has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. And Ken is at Ken1191. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.